You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello, it's Sammy here, and this episode of Fulhamish is supported by NordVPN. Now, NordVPN is a way of watching sporting events, TV shows, and films which aren't available where you are by switching your virtual location of your phone, tablet, or laptop to a country which is. Particularly perfect for those 3 p.m. kickoffs which aren't televised in the UK. And right now, you can get an exclusive discount by going to nordvpn.com/Fulhamish. Not only will you benefit from their already huge discount, but you'll also get an extra 4 months for free. You can use one account on up to 6 devices. Also, it's completely no risk thanks to Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. So to get that special rate plus 4 free months, go to nordvpn.com/Fulhamish or hit the link in the description of this podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
It's the Fulhamish podcast, your independent voice of Fulham FC. Welcome to the show. Welcome to the Thursday Club. My name is Jack Collins and I'll be your host today, standing in for a skiing Mr. Sammy James. But it is going to be a whole lot of fun. We're going to look back at that game at Molineux, the upsetting 2-1 defeat to Wolves, ahead to a tricky task against Tottenham at the Cottage at the weekend, and a load of other bits and bobs. And joining me on the sofa, Mr. George Cooper. How you doing, mate?
Fine, thank you. Yeah, no, I'm good. I'm trying. That was my best Sammy James impression.
I thought just it there. Might be, yeah.
Yeah, he's here, he's with us in spirit, but I'm good. I'm good. You all right?
Yeah, I'm good. It's nice to have you on the Thursday Club. And of course, the Athletic's very own Fulham correspondent, Mr. Peter Rutster. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, not too bad. I'm fine, thank you. I was trying to get the intonation right with the fine, and that you've got to really get the peak.
Yeah.
Or the trough.
You've got to attack the front of it. That's a very Sammy of you.
Yeah, going from the off.
Exactly. Well, lots to get through, so let's get stuck into it. And let's start at Wolves. Peter, it was a disappointing day considering the circumstances surrounding it. Not only were Fulham coming into the game in really good form and looking at the top half of the table as somewhat achievable, would have leapfrogged Wolves with a win. You then add that to Wolves' injury concerns and the fact that Jean Bellegarde and Pedro Neto went off injured in the first half. It felt all set up for Fulham to go and get 3 points. That's not what transpired.
Yeah, very frustrating. Very frustrating, even because of how the game itself sort of panned out and the amount of chances Fulham had. You mentioned the injuries there, the way Wolves were very much on the ropes. And then just after halftime, there was that 15, 20-minute spell where I don't know what it was, almost complacency, but it wasn't really. It was just dropping a gear when Wolves came out, having up to gear. Too many sloppy passes, some good turnovers from Wolves, and they scored off the back of it. And it just, Fulham never quite really were able to get back into the game after then. So, yeah, as you say, frustrating because it was a game where you could really sort of recalibrate the season a little bit with a win, you know, to go level on points with Wolves. And there's been a lot of talk about Wolves and how well they've done, and you know, they're a good team and they're clearly being coached very well by Gary O'Neill at the moment, considering everything that's happened there. You know, the manager leaving, injuries, as we've talked about. But it felt like Fulham could, you know, level on points with them on 38. Suddenly you're looking at the top half, trying to match, you know, last season's finish, if not better it. And then you come away with a defeat and it extends the gap, and we're sort of in that not in the bottom half, but not quite good enough for the top half sort of position. So all in all, yeah, very frustrating.
Yeah, stuck between stations is probably how I would put it. George, was it just one of those days at the office? The finishing in the first half obviously felt wasteful, frustrating, profligate in front of goal. But equally, there was scope for Fulham to kick on and build. Another kind of 20-minute spell, Marco Silva referenced this after the game, where it got away from Fulham and we weren't able to capitalise on that early dominance.
It was an interesting one because, yes, the finishing left a lot to be desired. Yes, we missed some very big chances. Yes, we let Wolves get back into it for large spells of the second half. But by and large, I thought it was actually a pretty good performance.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of cause for optimism. We saw some beautiful football, particularly in the first half. I mean, the goal, had Harry Wilson had put that away, arguably would have been our goal of the season.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
It was the back heel from Lukic, that ball from Iwobi threaded through beautifully. And there was a lot of really, really good fluid play. Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of, because it was just one of those days. Wolves took their chances, we didn't. That's what it came down to. But it wasn't a bad performance. Certainly one not to sort of dwell on too long, I don't think. It was more just disappointing given the sort of flip in the narrative that it could have given us, as Peter alluded to. But yeah, that was it was just a typical Fulham away performance, really. How many times have we seen that?
I think you could tell how frustrating it was. It was particularly when Marco Silva came in for his post-match press conference, and you get the sort of the tone of his answers. You know, whenever he gives a post-match press conference, there'll be the first question, and then he'll give his sort of like match report, how he saw the game pan out, and you know, first half we did this well, second half we didn't do this well. You can tell when there was quite a lot put onto the performance, and I sort of asked towards the end of that presser, just, you know, is this what's holding Fulham back? You know, is this what's stopping them? Because you look at the squad, and you know, that was such a good bench, probably the strongest squad of the season. You've got Issa Diop and Balotore not actually able to get into the squad because of who's available, and everything considered with Wolves and everything else. You just feel like, right, it was the sort of moment. And it's these kind of games, this one was probably more inexplicable than most because of that weird 15-20 minute spell where you're expecting Fulham to take control of the game, and yet somehow Wolves have done that, and Maryl Amin is everywhere, and Ryan Nori is just like playing on the right wing and looking incredibly effective. And it was very, very strange. And you could tell from just the Silva's body language, and it was kind of, I think it was reflective of what was felt within the group as well, because clearly there was a sense that this is a really good point in the season for Fulham. I think going back to the start of the year, we looked at the fixtures and we're like, there's no real like runs, are there? It was very much, you'll have a few games and then a hard game, a few games and a hard, like, you know, ostensibly based on paper. So it was always going to be a bit more difficult. But this patch, you know, one defeat from six going into the game, and that defeat was Villa. You know, performance is generally pretty consistent. It just felt like, actually, this could be a purple patch you can really build on. You know, and Silva said, you know, it's really hard to be consistent, to have a moment. And that's how they described it. It's like, this was a moment for Fulham. And then it just passed by. And that was the feeling, wasn't it? That moment's just slipped away a little bit, and obviously it's Spurs next, so it's quite difficult to maintain it. And it's a shame because the performance was actually good, as you were saying. You know, the performance was good and reflected the positive moment that Fulham are in, you know, trying to get three wins in a row for the first time this season. And I think that just compounded the general frustration, and you could sense that from just the way he was in that presser. And I think everyone sort of felt that, particularly considering where we are in the season as we try to go towards the last 10 games.
Yeah, I think it's interesting here to kind of examine it, you know, a tad more. And there was a lot of chat groups about the fact that, was Lukic going to start? Was Harrison Reed going to start? Was Joao Palhinha going to come straight back into the team? I think we all thought that Palhinha was going to walk straight back into his midfield role. Silva was brave with that decision and decided to stick with the midfield core that had obviously won the two games in Palhinha's absence. I think for the most part, it worked. The problem with results like that is that it justifies almost anyone who's like, why hasn't he just walked straight back in, when the midfield didn't feel hugely like the problem, I think, at the weekend.
I think Farrell on the podcast that we recorded on Sunday summed it up quite well in that if Fulham win that game, as we very well could have done, then the whole Paulinho-Lukic conversation doesn't really come up at all.
Yeah.
I think Marco did the right thing by and large because he sucks his principles in featuring Lukic. And yeah, as you said, the midfield wasn't really the issue on the weekend. Yeah, it's one of the reasons that Marco's so popular. We sort of spoke about it. And I think that Paulinho does come in for the Spurs game. Yeah. I'd be very surprised if we don't see that. But to drop Lukic for no fault of his own is against Marco Silva's moral ethos, should we say. And yeah, I fully back it, to be honest.
I thought Lukic was really, really good again. And I wouldn't be surprised if he does try the Lukic-Paulinho pivot in this Spurs game, just to see what it looks like. It's not a free hit. We're playing at home and it's a London derby. But it does feel in kind of one of those games that if Fulham got a result, it would be a shock. We're going to talk about Tottenham a little bit more later, but I wouldn't be overly surprised. There was other positives though. And Peter, I just wanted to kind of talk a little bit about Armando Broya's cameo. We haven't seen all that much from him, although to be fair, at the end of games when he has come on, I think he's looked bright. This time he made things happen. And yes, it was a little bit of necessity towards the end of the game, chucking on a couple of strikers at the same time to try and force it. But generally, I thought that, you know, his performance when he came on, obviously, you know, picking up the assist, making things happen, might be the caveat he needs. And I know there's a lot of things going on around if he doesn't start this weekend, there's no way that Fulham can get out of the £4 million that they have to pay Chelsea, etc. I thought that his cameo maybe warranted a go at least this weekend because I thought he was good. And he's been good in most of his cameos.
Yeah, I mean, God, imagine being in his head at the moment. It must be so bloody frustrating to go from one bench to another bench when you come to a loan that you're expecting to start. And the guy who, you know, hadn't really played that much, hadn't looked like scoring, suddenly goes on a ridiculous goal scoring run and you're stuck on the bench. Yeah, I do feel for him a lot, actually. And you're right. I'm glad you brought him up because I actually thought he was probably his most effective, most eye-catching we've seen from him. I know he got the assist and it was sort of like a knock, wasn't it, to Iwobi, who then... It was a really smart finish from Iwobi, actually. Yeah, great reactions. But yeah, he was really lively, really direct. You could see his ability to carry the ball, to drive at defenders with the ball. He's quite a big guy as well. So, you know, certainly noteworthy to see him play in that sort of way, that sort of verticality he's got. I think it'd be nice to see him, I suppose, to see a run. I mean, it's just difficult, isn't it? I don't think Muniz was particularly poor in the game. I think it was a different type of game. I don't think he was as effective as he has been in terms of holding the ball up. So maybe there's an opening there for him. I think from a Fulham perspective, you're resigned to paying that money now. And I think if that does happen, and I fully expect it will, you look back on it and go, well, it's just one of those things, I guess.
Spent,
I don't think anyone
to be fair at this point.
It is because of what's happened with Muniz. You know, I mean, I saw some reports this week or yesterday basically saying, well, you know, Muniz's value is now 20 million or whatever, but whatever it is, it's certainly a lot higher than it was for a 22-year-old who's proven he can score goals in the Premier League. It's a difficult one. I think it'll be interesting if he doesn't get starts because there'll be a point where your head really does drop, right? You know, you've gone from playing for Chelsea and getting some minutes at Chelsea. Not that Chelsea are doing particularly well this season, and you know, notwithstanding everything else, the fact that they're another club in SW6, but you've gone to Fulham with the expectation to play. I think we all expected once that transfer came around that he would play every game to the end of the season, or at least until Raúl Jiménez was back. And now he's facing the scenario where you've got Muniz in form, Jiménez is back in training, and you haven't had a start yet. So I think that becomes harder to manage, potentially. Obviously, he's a lone player, so probably the longer-term implications aren't as bad. But I do feel for him. And it was good to see him have a good cameo at the weekend and maybe make a case to start.
Yeah, I think we were waiting for that moment, whether it be, you know, Muniz's poor performance, not waiting for it in terms of... you know, wanting it, but waiting for it in terms of expectation that the moment would come where either there was a poor performance or he did enough from the bench as a cameo to kind of justify a selection in the next game. And maybe that's where we're at this weekend. Although, it seems it would seem incredibly harsh to drop Muniz at this point, considering what he's been through. And as you say, Peter, without it being a particularly poor performance at the weekend, just not one where he was able to be that effective. I have seen some people calling for both of them to start, but I'm not 100% sure that Marco Silva is ever going to start with two strikers on the pitch at the same time.
One other thing as well, I guess you have to think about what's in the long-term interest of Fulham here.
Yeah,
is it worth playing Muniz to the rest of the season, who is a permanent player, or Breuer, who isn't? Interesting dynamic, definitely.
We're not a club that develops players for other teams anyway. So
I'd be pretty disappointed if Breuer starts on the weekend, to be quite honest.
Fair.
Muniz did nothing to, you know, suggest that his purple patches come to an end. And as Peter said, it's totally within our interest to keep playing him and keep building his confidence.
This is a masterclass in knocking Breuer's value down so we can buy him for like £4 million in the summer, isn't it? You're like, oh, it wasn't even good enough to start for us. You don't want him. You're going to have to get rid of him. And you know, you mentioned it earlier, Peter, but I thought it was interesting. If you can't get in this Chelsea side, who were lacking goal scorers, lacking attacking threats, then you're not getting in any Chelsea side, I'm afraid. That's the only way, as much as it pains me to say it, that the club is going to move with the amount that's been invested in it. It's going to be slow, but they will move upwards and they will find, you know, players, and they will look this summer to buy a big name number nine. If you're not getting in this season, he's not going to get that opportunity. I think they were looking for him to maximise value. That hasn't happened. Maybe we're playing 4D chess. I don't know.
Could you imagine this?
Maybe, well, maybe. You know, Breuer has been looked at by Fulham. Silva said that the other week. You know, someone they looked at summer for last. So, like, you know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility, I guess. You just, with the price, you just got to make sure he's happy enough to come back.
Yeah, I can imagine a Tony Khan tweet after we've got him for an absolute steal being it was there. It was like, you know, sort of.
Just him with the, just that thing of being like, I am Jose Mourinho.
As he was quick to remind us about how instrumental he was with the Mitro deal and so on. If he came out from behind the curtain and revealed that this was all just 4D chess as you described,
I would quite enjoy it. I'm not gonna lie. I think that would be very, very funny. Talking of players signing and contracts, shall we talk quickly about Tosin Adebayo? Peter, you reported on what Marco said about both Tosin and Bobby Decordova-Reed before this game in the press conference. And, you know, it doesn't look like Fulham have given up hope of signing either of them to new deals.
Yeah, and Kenny Tete as well. It was all three of them. Because I think they're sort of the main ones coming to the end of the season, unless I've missed someone. I think they're the three.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a surprise what he said. So Silva just said, look, we're talking with all three. We want to sign all three. Tete's situation is different because he has an option in his contract, which Fulham can trigger at any time. So it leaves them in a more secure position, I suppose. But I think it's, you know, you can still trigger that, but then you've got to think of the long term. I guess you don't want to be in a scenario which we have with Tosin, which is, you know, he from a club perspective, this is the way he could, you know, leave for free. He can talk to overseas clubs at the moment. He's within his rights to do that, seeing as he's in the final 6 months of his contract. So I think, yeah, interesting scenario. Obviously, I think all three have a role to play. We can see the versatility of Decordova-Reed and the value he brings having him around. One of the leaders in the group who we've talked about. Tete's had a more difficult season with injury, but I think, you know, we've seen him at his best and what he can do. I think because of the way Timothy Castagne has played, and I don't think it's a surprise that he's adapted pretty quickly and seamlessly,
there's
a bit more insurance on that side. But again, you'll want to be in a position where if Tete goes, you have somewhere to make money off him. He was only signed for a really low fee. It was I can't remember what it was. It was a couple of million pounds, wasn't it? Or £3 million, I think, from Lyon.
€3 million, perhaps. It was low. I remember that.
Yeah. And then obviously Tosin, who I think has probably played his best football for Fulham this season since he's come back from his groin injury. Like particularly that period in December where he came back in, thinking of the League Cup semi-final, obviously had the penalty, which sort of crowned his return to form. But I don't think he had the best game at Molineux. I think he was part of that very strange 20-minute period after half-time where Fulham were giving the ball away too easily. But I think overall, looking at his form, I think he's been absolutely excellent.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, George, it seems a no-brainer to try and tie him down. Whether that is feasible or not becomes a different question. There have been reports. Now, they haven't been able to, you know, sort of verify the veracity of how accurate these are. But there have been reports that Fulham have put a pretty bumper offer on the table for Tosin and that it's being considered. And, you know, Team Talk reporting today that there is a growing sense that Fulham might be able to hang on to him. Equally, the same point of the day, Sky Sports publishing an article that was like, why is Tosin Adebayor not in the England team? Like, no, shush, shush, shush. Be quiet there for a minute. We don't need this right now. We can deal with this later. But it feels like a strange place because there will be other interest in Tosin Adebayor, considering his performances, considering his age profile, considering he's homegrown talent. All of these things kind of fit into what clubs are looking for and where he needs to be. This decision is going to be a tricky one, but I can understand why Fulham are pushing quite hard to make it happen at this point, especially considering that relationship he's built up with Calvin Bassey.
Mm, yeah, I mean, no brainer. If we can tie him down, then absolutely. I think I speak for everyone in the Fulham fan base, it would be really, really sad to see him go. And he's become an integral part of that back line. I don't know why, but I have a feeling that he'll go to a top side on the continent. I can see him going to an AC Milan. He's been linked quite heavily with there. You know, somewhere in Italy or even sort of Spain, perhaps. But when I look at the Premier League, if he's to remain in England, and you look at the sides that are more attractive, shall we say, or in better positions than Fulham, I don't know if there are any sides that he necessarily walks into. I mean, there was talk about Liverpool buying him at one point. Spurs, does he walk into the Spurs side, do you think?
Not a full strength, no.
Liverpool?
Not a full strength.
No. Yeah, I don't know. I really don't know. But yeah, that article was quite worrying because they're talking about his statistical profile and, you know, aerial duels one and this, that and the other. And it's, as you said, it's like, shut up.
Yeah. Can we just hang on that for like 3 months?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I think maybe 15 years ago, you say you could go into AC Milan, you think, okay, yeah, bloody hell. But I'm just thinking of Thikaya Tomori, right? And it's quite clear that Tosin wants to play for England, you know, wants to get in the England squad. And I think he should be in that conversation. It's hard to disagree with that. But does that help his cause, playing for AC Milan? And I know, Jack, you think, well, it's Serie A and whatever. But considering the way England selections have gone.
Yeah.
Is he better off playing regularly in the Premier League?
I think it is the easy one. The question then becomes, will Gareth Southgate be the England manager by the time the next season kicks off? Then you start to answer, no, and this is all theoretical, right? And then we're in different places and maybe a new manager will give more shrift to players playing abroad who aren't called Jordan Henderson. But it does kind of feel like you're in a space where everything's a bit in transition and I'm not 100% sure what the right move would be at that point. I think to go and play for AC Milan at San Siro is probably one of the most amazing things you can do in football. Does it help his England selection chances? I don't know. Not if Southgate's in charge.
I'm not playing that down. I mean, if I was offered the chance to play for AC Milan, you'd go and play for AC Milan, wouldn't you? I suppose, you know.
I think I'd still get in the Ireland team if I was playing for AC Milan. So the question's probably a bit different.
I don't think you'd need to play for AC Milan for that. but just on Tosin and where he plays, when you actually break down what he offers, you've got a really good ball playing centre back, really key to how Fulham like to build up through their defenders, breaking between the lines, and also really quite dominant aerially in duels. I think he's got better at that actually.
Yeah, agreed.
Because I think we had a similar. I think maybe we had a similar conversation when he joined Fulham, and I think it was. That was about 3.5 years ago, wasn't it? When he had the season next to Joachim Andersen, they had that 3.5 month spell under Parker where Fulham just had one of the best defensive records in the league. I think only City had a better defensive record over a 2 month period. And that was probably the last time where we thought, well, right, he was in that, and it was posting similar numbers. Obviously, Fulham have gone up and down, and it's been a little bit trickier since then. But I think now we're at a point where we're seeing a player do the same thing in the Premier League in what is a better team playing in a better sort of more forward thinking philosophy, I think, more ball playing, possession based philosophy, and really sort of holding his own. So I think when those conversations come up, I feel like he's there. He would be a candidate for those kind of clubs. It's just whether you've got the opportunity to play, because centre-back's one of those positions where if it's stable and you've got a good partnership, you don't rotate, really. It's not well, you, some clubs do, but
it's
you
rare,
wouldn't do it out of choice, I think.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. And, you know, I think he could play, absolutely, for one of the clubs that you mentioned earlier, George, you know, Liverpool or Tottenham in particular, I think, feels like a place where he would kind of fit into the squad.
Mm.
But I don't think he would start over either Romero or Van de Ven if everyone was at full strength. Now, you can argue that with having to play in different competitions, they'll have Champions League football almost certainly next year. There will be more rotation in terms of that. And it's not like either of the centre-backs have been particularly blessed with injury-free seasons. But is that what you want? To be third choice and playing in every, you know, and taken away in the big games when everyone is fit? I don't know. I don't know what that looks like for a career and what it means for everything else. But it is an interesting one to consider. I thought one other thing you mentioned was interesting. You said, I think I speak for everyone and be like, it would be sad to lose him. And I agree. But I think even more than that, it would be really sad to lose him for free.
Mm.
Because I think you're probably talking about someone who commands a fee of, what, 15, 20 million if Fulham have him on a contract and someone comes in to look for a centre-back of that calibre.
Yeah, and especially considering we picked him up for 2 million.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it would be frustrating, but I mean, it certainly wouldn't be the first time that we've seen talent that is valued insanely higher go for free. So I think we're kind of used to it at Fulham.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting. Just on the other two, Peter, I think Tosin obviously has dominated the headlines because he feels like the one that's least likely to sign. I don't really see a world where Bobby Decord-Overeed doesn't sign a new contract at Fulham. That doesn't seem to be, like, in my head, that doesn't make sense. Kenny Tete, especially considering that he's been displaced from his sort of starting berth, I could understand. But as you mentioned, Fulham have the option there. So at the very least, the option can be triggered. And if he wants to leave, then a sale can maybe be agreed. But in my head, I think Bobby Decord-Overeed probably is still wearing Fulham's number 14 shirt next season.
Yeah. I think Bobby Decord-Overeed, I think he spoke relatively recently about things going in a positive direction on talks. So, I don't think that's an issue to do with him wanting to leave or anything like that. I think it's just squad planning, isn't it? I'll be surprised if he's not in the squad next season. Kenny Tete, is interesting because the stock he probably had last summer is not the same as the stock he has now, if you see what I mean. If you're thinking about it from their negotiating standpoint, because he's not played as much, partly because of Castagna, but also because he's had a few injury niggles and whatever else. So, you know, if I'm Kenny Tete, I would probably look to stay. I mean, he's 29, I think, is his next birthday. So I think it's at that sort of juncture where he's 29 in October. He's at that juncture where you'd get one more move after this point if you wanted it, or you're looking at one or two good contracts, if you see what I mean. Yeah. So I think it's more about seeing through the negotiations, I think, with those guys. But I think particularly in Tete's case, as we outlined earlier, I think Fulham are in a better place because of the work they did to get Castagna in.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's exactly where it is. And look, we talk about succession planning all the time. Successful succession planning done in that regard. A right back who is very comfortable in this system, even if Kenny Tete was to leave. I think we'll leave part one there. After the break, we're going to be talking about Tottenham at home. Don't go anywhere.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to the Thursday Club here on Fulhamish. Jack Collins here with Peter Rutzler and George Cooper. Just a shout out to our sponsors here at the Thursday Club, Green King Pubs. You can catch all televised sport at your local Green King Sport Pub, which is particularly useful this weekend if you can't make it down to the cottage, because Fulham versus Tottenham is live on TV. And you can get 10% off all of your drinks during any televised sport game with the Green King Sport Pub app. So if you're not at the cottage, make sure you're down at a Green King pub. Right, let's look forward to that game against Tottenham. Maybe looking forward to it is the wrong turn of phrase, considering the demolition job they did away at Aston Villa last weekend, Pete. It was one of the best performances I think we've seen under Ange Postecoglou. Kind of felt like they combined that attacking intent from early in the season with a solid defensive performance as well. Feels like a relatively scary time to be playing this Spurs side as they get players back from injury, as they feel like they're kicking into gear once again.
Yeah, there's a really interesting analysis of them recently that I was listening to that I can't remember now, but it was quite, sorry, no plug here. I'll claim it as my own, about the way in which they've had to sort of adapt without James Maddison. Obviously, James Maddison's come back from injury and it was so important to that early season run, the way they were playing, the way they were winning games, but they've sort of had to sort of adjust in the meantime to trying to pick up points and score goals without him. And now that they have him back, they've also, it's kind of like you've got a team that can play without James Maddison and all of a sudden has a surprise that they've got James Maddison as well.
Yeah.
And that sort of came to fruition against Villa. I think the Villa game is also sort of caveated by Unai Emery's brain fade for that game by deciding to change up how Villa play and have played all season at Villa Park. We played the back five, didn't he? And yeah, it was pretty obvious that the team weren't used to playing in that structure. You know, the games in which we've seen Villa, they've had that sort of 4-2-2-2, and it's quite an obvious box midfield, and you have the wide forwards at times, and that movement, you know, horizontally and vertically causes all sorts of problems. They changed their shape, and Spurs took full advantage, and John McGinn lost his head, and I think that all played a part. But yeah, I think you're right. It feels like Spurs are finally beginning to click into gear. The injuries are clearing up. You know, they had a lot of defensive injuries as well, didn't they? Van de Ven's back now. He is back.
Well, he's back, and then he got slightly injured again, but I don't think that he's going to be missing this one, sadly. You never wish injury on a player, but I wouldn't mind him just being, you know, on the worry list for one more week.
They've got, and obviously Son's come back in, he's starting to find his rhythm again. They're looking more like the team that started the season strongly, and it doesn't make it the best time really to face them. I was just looking at the stats actually just now, and I think only City and Liverpool have scored more goals than they have in open play. It's only two more goals for City and one more for Liverpool, so it shows the levels that they're reaching star-wise, and that's not bad considering the players that they've missed.
Yeah, definitely. It's going to be interesting, George, because Spurs actually set up in a relatively similar, you know, tactical system that Fulham do. Now, they operate it slightly differently in what Ange Postecoglou wants from his fullbacks, etc., whereas Fulham's fullbacks tend to go high and wide. They tend to come inside a little bit more and make those darts into the middle of the pitch. But we are looking at a midfield battle, which I think will be really interesting. Maddison should play again. We were talking earlier that Polina probably comes back in. His job is going to have to be to shackle James Maddison's creativity. And then behind that, there's this sort of partnership of Pape Matar, who I think has been absolutely sensational, and Yves Bissouma, who's rediscovered that form that we originally saw down at Brighton under Postecoglou this year. It's a formidable midfield, but equally, midfield has been somewhere that Fulham have been relatively strong, I think, throughout the course of this season. And the idea of these two going sort of man for man up against each other with Polina and whoever plays next to him, whether that be Reed, whether that be Lukic, whether that be Tom Kearney, and then Andreas sort of trying to drive at the number six for Spurs, does sort of offer up an opportunity to see how Fulham can match up man for man, I think.
Yeah, I think that you're right in saying that that is going to be where the game is won or lost over the weekend. I also think there's a real opportunity that if we can come out the better side with those sort of key midfield battles, if we can take advantage of the incredibly high line that Spurs play with, and we've got players like Iwobi who are so good in the transition, if we can, you know, get our sort of pacey players like Harry Wilson and put Muniz through, then I think that there's a real opportunity to exploit Spurs where, you know, play their sort of how they play, use their game plan against them. But no, I 100% think that it's going to be very key to see. And I mean, I just pray that Paulinho, after his performance on the weekend with Aston Villa, has calmed down a little touch and like got his sort of game feet back on, because he was flying into things left, right and centre. And I think that it's going to be intense. It's going to, we know how this Ange Postecoglou team play. And as long as we can keep the better side of that and keep disciplined and control them rather than just going in all guns blazing, then I think we've got a real battle on our hands.
Yeah, I mean, Peter, Fulham have beaten Spurs under Postecoglou at the Cottage already this season, albeit a relatively rotated Spurs side. It was a relatively rotated Fulham side as well. There is that psychological kind of lack of a barrier to being like, oh, can we beat this side? There was obviously discussion about where Fulham fell in that category last year with not being able to beat the big sides. We've kind of got that hoodoo out of the way by going and winning at Old Trafford. And I think that in some ways, obviously the defeat to Wolves is incredibly frustrating, but if Fulham came into this game on the back of three wins, I think there'd be quite a lot of optimism around it in terms of, oh, all right, let's go and take them on and let's go and attack this Spurs side and see what they're made of. I think that kind of expectation level is potentially dropped because of the defeat to Wolves. And maybe in some ways that opens up a little bit of freedom for Fulham to go and have a go and be like, okay, well, we're not being expected to win here, but there are chinks in this armour. If they were perfect, they'd be in the title conversation. They're not there yet, even if they're a very good side.
Yeah, no, I think so. I think you're right. Maybe that does help in some ways, the fact that you don't have that little bit of extra expectation. Obviously, I think they would have preferred to have had momentum, but I think you're right about the hoodoo being gone. Obviously Old Trafford beating Arsenal, I don't think there's that sense that teams can, you know, face a good Fulham team and then still take the points. I think they're sort of pushing back a bit on that now, and it's not like the performance against Wolves was poor, as we talked about. It was a good performance, or generally did enough to win the game. Different day, they take the chances, and it's a comfortable afternoon's work, and we're having a very different conversation here. It doesn't make the task any easier in terms of who you're playing, but I don't think they're, you know, Fulham have got, it's interesting, isn't it? Because we're getting close to a point where you go, well, what's there left to play for?
Yeah, what's left
to achieve? As it stands, Fulham still have, and as it stands, Fulham do have targets they can hit. They can hit the same points total as last year, with 1 point shy of a record points total in the Premier League. Like, these, they're not small things to hit. And if you can, I suppose the real challenge is trying to just keep that performance level, you know, and results is one thing, and that's frustrating, and it's been inconsistent, still has that inconsistency element. But if the performance level can stay at the level that it's been at in these last few weeks, then I don't see why they can't cause Spurs problems and get back to winning ways.
Yeah, I mean, George, it would also set up a nice couple of weeks for Fulham because obviously then come up against Sheffield United in a fortnight's time, and then Nottingham Forest away as well. Two teams obviously struggling further down the table than we are. There's a kind of space in your head that you go, well, if you can beat Tottenham, then you could look at getting 9 points on the board in this space. And that would mean that we'd be looking at a run of, what, one defeat in 10, in nine maybe? That's a space where Fulham can look to, not necessarily, I think the loss to Wolves probably puts Europe out of the question, to be completely honest. I think it was a long shot before the Wolves game. I think the chances are now next to nothing, even if it does drop to eighth. But there is still that kind of space of being like, okay, what can Fulham do this season? There's space to impact the race for the Champions League in this game, obviously. There's space to impact the title race in that Fulham still play both Manchester City and Liverpool at Craven Cottage. There feels like there's enough to sort of keep people invested and motivated. And I think that games like these, where you are coming up against a side who everyone is in, you know, full praise of at the moment, and rightly so, because Spurs have been excellent this season under Postecoglou, you're going to go like, okay, if they're that good, then let's see them beat us. I think that in itself will provide kind of a go and rise to the challenge to these players. And we've seen them do it multiple times this season.
Yeah, I mean, I've got no doubt that the atmosphere is going to be brilliant on Saturday. It's like when you look back over seasons, you look at those key fixtures, and this is a big game. You
know, I like a 5:30 kickoff.
Yeah, 5:30 kickoff. We'll be under the lights. You know, when we look back at the season, we'll think about, you know, the Manchester United away victory beating Arsenal at home. If we beat Tottenham on Saturday, that will be within that kind of conversation.
Yeah,
the Everton game in the FA Cup. Like these are big games, and I think that. Yeah, it'll put us. It's like let's not kid ourselves. It's not season defining, is it? If we lose, there's no. It's fine. Yeah. Nobody's expecting.
I hate using the word free hit, but
nobody's expecting us to win, which kind of means that we've got a bit of a sort of lone horse of the national feel about Fulham at the minute. So yeah, and then we've got two very fun away days coming up, Nottingham Forest in particular, midweek. That'd be great.
Yeah.
So I think it's all looking good. And there's more cause for optimism around this club at the minute, especially on the field, particularly on the field, if not only on the field. But yeah, it'll be a big game, big result. And yeah. I think we've got every chance of taking the match to them.
Yeah, I agree. Right, before we move on, I'm just going to ask you how you'd line up against this Spurs side. Well, Peter, how you'd line up and how you think Marco will line up will be probably an interesting one, because there is obviously those changes that he almost certainly will make in the middle now.
Oh, God. How would he line up? Probably don't change the back four. Palhinha will come back. I'd be surprised if he doesn't, just because of this quality of player, isn't it? I'm trying to square the Lukic circle here. I'm, you know, in terms of how Silva has played it, there's a balance, right? There's a real balance to how he wants that midfield to look. We talked about how you can't really get Kearney in that Lukic Reed midfield because of what Pereira does off the ball, or Iwobi can do off the ball, which TC, I think he did, to be fair, he has played that role for about 20 minutes in games and as a substitute.
Yeah, but not for 90.
But not for a longer spell. I think that's clear. So if you play Palhinha, you can play Kearney. but does that mean you can play Lukic with Palhinha? And if you were to play Lukic with Palhinha, you'd be playing Lukic as more as the eight. And I don't know whether, I think that would be more of a, not a gamble, but it would be a test, right? It'd be a trial, because you've got Lukic, who's only really played a six. They would have to have worked on it in training. And that eight role is really important because of the way it combines with the wingers and the fullback. Is Lukic comfortable with making those rotations into wide areas? I'm sure he can do it, but it's just whether it's going to be effective enough and will it get the best out of him? So part of me wonders if it goes back to Palhinha, Kearney, Pereira as an option. I think I can see that happening. And I could also see Willian returning on the left. But then where do you put Alex Iwobi?
Is he bold enough? Oh. Is he bold enough to play Iwobi in the eight? That's my question.
Because
if
Pereira,
Willian wants to come back
that
in...
That would work.
No, not for Pereira.
Oh, he wouldn't.
If you went with a midfield three of Palhinha, Iwobi and Pereira, is that too open? Or does it allow Iwobi and Pereira to basically shackle Bissouma and Pape Sarr in the same, you know, and leave kind of Maddison to Palhinha? I wonder if he looks at just trying to play slightly more expansive. And, you know, George mentioned it, those transitions in the middle, is Iwobi able to affect them even further from a space where he's in those rotations rather than coming off the flank? I don't know. I think that would be a very bold move to go with that midfield, but I don't think it's out of the question.
No. I think there's a case for that for sure. I'm just thinking of the fullbacks as well. Is this a game you throw Adama into from the start with your inverting fullbacks and you just have Adama as an outlet on one side, Willian deeper combining with Robinson on the other? Those transitions, having Robinson carrying, Adama Traoré carrying. I don't know. Is
he
that too much?
He did start his only game this season against Tottenham in the Cup, didn't he? So there's form. at the very least, for trying to execute just in that regard. Yeah, I mean, I don't hate it.
I think if Wilson scores that one on one, he would have pretty much locked the position down. I think it was getting close to that. So it's frustration for him that he didn't take that chance. I think he had a quiet game at Molineux.
Yeah, he did. Although he created a lot. And I think that, you know, getting into those opportunities, yes, he didn't score and there's frustration around those missed chances, but Harry Wilson's getting into the right positions. And I've said for a long time that I think that Harry Wilson, who gets a consistent run of games in the side, is the most effective Harry Wilson that Fulham have. And being able to utilise Adama as an impact substitute, especially if a game like this is tight and Spurs are all out pushing for a win that they need to keep themselves in, you know, Champions League contention, to keep themselves pace with Villa, that's an incredible option to have. So I wonder if he sticks with Wilson for this and utilises Adama. But I don't like tactically, in the idea that Spurs often leave spaces in those fullback areas, I don't mind it at all.
Yeah, well, that's it. But I agree with Wilson. I feel like he just needs that consistent run. It's felt like that, hasn't it? Just play him into form, kind of thing. It feels like we could be in that patch. It's not an easy decision, and I'll leave the striker thing to.
I was going to say, George. Coops, any thoughts?
Mooners every day, no question.
I just meant generally, but no. We know what you feel about Mooners. It's all right. Okay.
How many times do I have to say it, Jack? God, I don't have an awful lot to add. To be honest, I think that this game, there's chance, every chance that we can mix things up. I'm all for the Adama Traore
experiment.
Yeah, that would be so. Imagine 4:30 rolls around and we see the team sheet, and that's be so much fun, you know. I also like the idea of the Iwobi, Pereira, Palinha midfield. I think more than likely we'll see Harrison Reed partner with Palinha. Yeah, so I think Lukic will be benched for this one. No fault of his own. I just think that that's our best option against Spurs. And then
if he benches Lukic, I'd leave him out of the squad.
Really?
Yeah. I don't think that Lukic, I suppose you could argue that if Pellini goes down with an injury in the first 10 minutes, then Lukic is the obvious player that comes on to change that. But we've seen, you know, more than once that Lukic coming off the bench is not effective. And if we have players that are effective who are able to impact games coming off the bench, then I'd maybe look at that. But that would feel incredibly harsh at the same time, right?
It's an incredibly interesting one. I think it's like one of the first points of the season where pretty much everyone's fit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and we're playing the calibre of Tottenham. So I guess this will be quite a strong indication of what Silva thinks is his best team.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. All right. So we'll end part two there. And after the break, we've got a couple of questions and a couple of this'll catch ons. Stick with us. Welcome back to the Thursday Club here on Fulhamish. Jack here with George and Peter. We've got some emails to get stuck into. We're going to start with this one from Arthur Duke. He says, question for the pod. How does this season rank in all-time history? So many lows, but also so many highs. A win at Old Trafford and a win against a seemingly unstoppable Arsenal side. A domestic cup semi-final all achieved whilst losing one of our most important strikers of recent years. I personally believe we are a win away at Brentford away from this being in the top five best seasons this side of the millennium. First, he's put 2009-2010, obviously the Europa League year. Second, he put 2021-2022, which obviously the championship promotion and success year. Three, he's got 2000-2001, which was another championship high campaign where we won the league. Four, he says, maybe this season is a toss-up between 2022-2023, this season, 2017-18, and 2019-20.
There's a lot of numbers just thrown at me there, Chad.
Yeah, I mean, I do appreciate that. I think that maybe this misses out some of the kind of highs under Chrissy Coleman. That would be my kind of thoughts. We talked about points records earlier, right?
Yeah.
That was one of Fulham's most successful years. We had some cup runs down those years. We had some massive victories, a 3-1 away at Old Trafford. You know, the last away win before this season springs to mind. I think maybe we're just being a little bit low on seasons that maybe finished relatively mid-table without all that excitement, but were up there with the best in, you know, Fulham recent campaigns.
Yeah, I'd also be very cautious.
Great escape.
Yeah, great escape. I mean, that, I mean, very, very different season, but arguably one of the most, like, well, definitely one of the most iconic. I'd also be really cautious with this question of recency bias as well, because everything's so fresh. But yeah, I mean, that Man United victory will go down in Fulham folklore for sure. And there's been a lot of fun to be had this season. Like the penalty shootout win against Everton, as I mentioned earlier.
And the one against Spurs.
Yeah. It was like two, I went through the full spectrum of human emotion in those games. And those are the memories that stick with us. I think like the sheer glory of the most recent promotion campaign is also like, I mean,
we were also just so dominant. Yeah. It felt so fun every week. Just been like, how many are we going to score today?
Yeah, that was, I'm like, what did we get, like 3 7-0s?
Yeah.
Was it 2 7-0s or 3?
2 7-0s and a 7-1, wasn't it?
Yeah, crazy.
No, 3 7-0s, wasn't it? I think it was 3-7.
Was it? Okay.
Yeah. However, I do think there's a really strong case that these past two Premier League seasons are right up there within the conversation. There's no doubt about that at all.
I like this shout. Generally, I'm not 100% sure I'd go top five this side at the turn of the, you know, the century, but I do think that as a shout, this season has been up there because expectations were perhaps at its lowest. And that helps.
Yeah.
Like the fact that we lost Mitrovic and there was no striker came in and the start of the season was, you know, kind of dreadful. And then to have come on and had some really big victories, the cup run, it all feels like it's been like, wow, I was expecting this to be a struggle. And there have been moments. But overall, I think you look back at it from this perspective at how all the season has gone, and it's very difficult to be upset with anything that Fulham have done.
Yeah, so far, really quick to add. But also, I think that...
Sure, but we could lose every game to the end for the rest of the season. I still think we'd be safe. It would.
We'd be safe, but it would be like, okay, well, that season was... Yeah, it would take the shine, as you said. I also think that same logic has to be applied to last season as well, because we were so terrified of the dreaded yo-yo tag and we've been bitten many times before. And I think it's the duality of the expectations meeting the reality, which makes things seem special at the time. And they indeed were special at the time. But yeah, it's a fun conversation.
It's a good one. It's a good one. Right, got one for you here, Peter. This is from Eric Hadrick. He says, long-time listener, first-time emailer here. We love these. With staying in the Premier League all but guaranteed for another year, do you think that the club needs to show real ambition to match the ambition of Marco Silva in the summer, or will we risk losing one of our best ever managers if we have another slow and somewhat disappointing transfer window, coupled with a slow start next season? Absolutely love the show. It's one of my weekly highlights. And P.S., can you just go around the table and ask the group who wins in a 100-meter sprint race, Jedi or Adama? He's actually written Jedi or the Beast, but I'm not sure I'm going to use that nickname. We can do that quickly and then we'll come on to the transfer window.
Yeah,
I think 100 meters Jedi wins, or 50 meters is Adama.
I think...
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, I think that checks out for me.
If you added hurdles in, I have no idea.
If you added hurdles, then Jedi for sure. He's like Adama's too stocky for hurdles. He
might smash through them.
Smash straight through.
It might not stop him.
like the thing out of Fantastic Four.
Right, the transfer window, Peter. I think there's a fair point here. There's going to be a bit of a managerial merry-go-round, as I like to say on Ranks, this summer, and I think that we could see a lot of managers moving around. We could end up with 8-9 big jobs, I think, across Europe. And I think that will filter down into sort of the mid-table clubs from a variety of these places. I think there's a real concern that both Benfica and Sporting might change managers this summer. And whether either of those appeal to Marco is a slightly different question. But I also think there will be interest in him from the likes of West Ham. Whether we take that or not is slightly different. And I wouldn't rule... This is going to sound mental, but I wouldn't rule Manchester United out of having a look. They are now supposedly run by smart people. It's not out of the question. I don't think the Man United would have a look.
I think in terms of Marco Silva's future, I think the Premier League is quite central to whatever he does. That was clear from last summer with the Saudi offer. He wants to be in the Premier League, sees it as the best league in the world. He said that. I can't see him going back to Portugal, for instance. So I think in that sense, fine. But I mean, you're right. You know, if a bigger club came calling, I'm sure, I'd imagine he'd want to take it. I don't think that'd be a surprise to anyone. I think in terms of what Fulham do, I think in terms of process, I think we've talked endlessly about, you know, the delays in getting recruit players in, what that means for pre-season, what that means for the start of the campaign. Yeah, quite clearly there wants to be an improvement there. I think in terms of ambitious window, I mean, if that's referring to investment, that's going to have the same shackles that it always has on it. And that's what they're actually able to do. What they're actually able to spend and how you compete in the Premier League, considering financial fair play and what that means, then that's not really going to change. So it'd be interesting to see how the summer plays out. I think it will be interesting because Fulham have got a really strong base now. I think the squad's pretty good, you know, in terms of depth. I think we talked about the number nine, and I wouldn't say that's settled yet. Muniz has made a good case, and I think how Fulham play that going forward would be interesting, and whatever happens with, we talked about the out-of-contract players and what it looks like from there, and if Palhinha goes and how he would be replaced. That doesn't look that likely at the moment, but we'll see. All of that will play a part. But I think whereas when Fulham first came up, they had so much to do and the delay felt, you know, really quite potentially problematic. Fulham don't, you're not going into this window
with massive
from
holes
a position
squad,
where you have a lot to do. No. It's much more refining and improving. And that's, to be honest, of the past, apart from last summer, but even then last summer, they had work to do. You know, they had loans, they had positions that weren't fully, they had contracts expiring. This is the first window for quite a few years where it is that kind
it
of
feels like Fulham
are
coming at it from a solid base, as long as we don't lose. Yeah. You know, the likes of Tosin, in which case then suddenly you need to go out and do business quite urgently. But if you can keep those players, then I think that, yeah, Fulham are coming at this window from a place of more relative strength.
But even like we talked about Tete, so there's Castagna there. Even with Tosin, there's three other centre-backs still on the books. Admittedly, you're probably still looking with Ream. You'll have another year, but you'll be looking longer term with him. You've got Calvin Bassey, and then you'll be thinking beyond that. So yeah, it's a better position to be in. And maybe that changes things a little bit in terms of how Fulham operate. It's the transfer window, right? Someone could come in and put 30, 40 million on the table for Robinson. Then you've got a problem at left back.
Activate the option on Foden Ballotore. Off we go. Off we go. You're now first choice despite starting one game. It'll be a hard sell, I think, but we will see. Right, two more questions quickly. This one's from Scott Henson. He says, I've been listening to all the podcasts on ticket prices, and it seems like there's a lot of confusion on why this is happening, when the reason is staring us in the face every time we visit the Cottage. The Riverside stand isn't done, and they are trying to make up the lost revenue by increasing the prices across the rest of the seats. I'd love to see people asking about when that stand is going to be completed, and if there's going to be a freeze in ticket prices, I don't see them decreasing them, when the new seats are available. I'd love to get your thoughts on that. It's an interesting one, George, because we're seeing those ticket prices start to be released. It's supposed to be finished by the end of 2024. I'm sure Pierre in a minute will be able to talk to us about the dates and details on that. But we are hearing from the Fulham ticket office. There's been emails sent out. They're starting to make calls around selling these. The prices are at middle section, appear to be tied to certain restaurants and bars that are going to be in the back of it, which is going to make it one, expensive, and two, exclusive. But I can't see how that freezes the rest of the ticket prices. I understand Scott's point here completely, and that Fulham's revenue model would have been trying to, you know, compensate for the fact that there was obviously a stand out of action for long periods, plus COVID, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm.
But I don't think that as soon as that's finished, everything's going to suddenly become hunky-dory.
No, absolutely not. You think there's going to be a reduction in ticket price? No.
Scott said he didn't,
yeah.
I don't think there's going to be a freeze. I think they go up again next year.
Yeah, likewise, I do. I think that obviously, a member of the Fulhamish crowd got a phone call from the sales rep, and they asked them whether it would be business or personal. Like they're wanting to flog those premium seats out to corporates for astronomical prices, so that people can have their prawn sandwiches and vol-au-vents and whatever else in the swanky restaurants. It does, yeah. It sounds very Fulham, but no, not a chance that the season tickets freeze. Oh, the tickets in the Riverside stand freeze. No, they go up again.
I think all the tickets will go up again. I'll be honest. I don't think they will see any freeze. I could be wrong. I hope I'm wrong. But I just can't see it again. I think that we're going to see an increase year on year from here on in. Peter, I know you've written about this and more kind of in terms of the dates of when things are going to be finished. It looks like the stand itself might well be open for the start of next season, but maybe the completion of the kind of structure behind it might take a little bit longer.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the delay's been quite noticeable to everyone. It's always like, it's a common thing actually, whenever every week, whichever athletic reporter is coming to visit it, I sort of time it before they ask, what's going on with the stand then? it normally gets asked before kickoff or at least 5 minutes into the game. And then I have to give the same answer. Obviously it's been delayed 3 times now, hasn't it? Onto the delays with the build and fit out. And obviously that caused a lot of problems for Buckingham, which impacted Liverpool with their stand. I think you're right. Obviously the hospitality should be open. They're looking to open it before the 2024-2025 season. So that's going to be soon. And I think, yeah, I've seen it going around as on socials about what the prices might look like. It'd be interesting to see what they do and how that does look and how that will work out. But obviously there's a hotel in there. It's going to be a private members club, but they're not anticipated to open until 2025. So, I mean, it's still going to be an ongoing process. It's not something that's going to have a sort of a moment where it's all open and running and up to speed. And it will be interesting to see what they do with season ticket prices, because I think that'll be coming up before too long. I think Tottenham announced theirs recently. But yeah, it should be interesting to see what the prices are when they do come out, and whether Fulham increase them like they did last year was quite a huge leap. So what that does for them, you know, I think the increase took them to a sort of a middling range, didn't they, within the Premier League. But so to do that again would really catch the eye, as much as the sort of the day-to-day match day tickets and what we've seen from the Riverside. So yeah, let's see what happens.
I'm not holding my breath for positive outcomes, I'll be honest.
Just quickly, it was one of my favourite things that Fulham Twitter has thrown out recently, which was I can't remember what account it was, but it was like race to the finish line, and then it was the Riverside stand pictured next to the Sagrada Familia. And then I just thought it was really funny. I actually looked up when the Sagrada Familia is due to be complete, and I think it's September next year. So yeah, there is every possibility that the Sagrada Familia may be completed before the Riverside stand. Obviously it had a slight 250-year or whatever head start, but still, the optics don't look great.
They don't look great. Right, last question is from Mike Wall. He says, "Dear Fulhamish, growing up, I had FIFA 95 on the Sega Genesis. I don't remember a ton about it, but I do have a very distinct memory of a certain chant coming from the crowd in the game that I could never understand what was being chanted. I watch Fulham every week from the US, and I've heard the chant a bunch of times on TV. It seems to be fairly common, but I've never been to a game in England, so I haven't been able to figure it out. It was chanted during the Wolves game at 48-18 and again at 49-14, extra time of the first half both times. Can you please tell me what's being said? I can't sleep, I can't eat, and not knowing has been haunting me since 1995. Mike, I can help. I can help. I went back onto the 90-minute highlights and found the exact moment that Mike was talking about. And what, it's the Wolves fans singing, but it's a chant that's used by most fans. And they're singing Gary O'Neill's Barmy Army. Just that, over and over again, in canon, you know, the repeated one. Obviously, Fulham sing a version of it with Marco Silva's Blau Army. And yeah, I'm pretty sure that every club, Premier League and beyond, has a version of the chant. But I'm glad to be able to help Mike out here, because
you can sleep easy now,
sleep
Mike.
Easy. That's what they're singing. A version of that.
That's a mind-expanding moment for Mike, what you just delivered.
The epiphany.
There you go. Yeah, they were singing Gary O'Neill's Barmy Army, but there are a variety of versions, Mike. We'll endeavour to find out the rest of them around the Premier League that you can get involved with. But it's usually a version of manager's name, apostrophe S, then sometimes the colour of the club or just the word Barmy and then Army. Mm. So there's a, there you go. Life is.
Enjoy your freedom, Mike.
Yeah. You sleep well tonight, Mike. You sleep well. With that, I think it's probably time for us to move on to a couple of This All Catch-Ons. I'm going to start with this from Jeffrey. He says, hello, Fulhamish podcast. First, thank you for providing great content. I love the pod and reference it often when discussing Fulham FC. I really love the segment This Will Catch On as it piques my creative side. I've submitted ideas in the past, some not so great, but I think this one should catch on. I say that because it's a song for Rodrigo Muniz and it's to the Van Morrison tune Domino. Slate or rate, I hope you and potentially the listeners enjoy it. Muniz definitely deserves it. Sincerely, from 4,071 miles away from home, two birds and a yank.
Oh, Rodrigo. Do 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 do. Hit it hard and strike it low. There you go. And then the second part, which is what I think would really catch on much better, would be, oh, Rodrigo. You whites. Oh, Rodrigo.
Very good. I mean, I've very much enjoyed it. I love that song. I love that song. It's a personal favourite. So I was delighted to hear it utilised. I don't know if it's well known enough, although I do like the second part to actually catch on. But great fun.
Yeah, I mean, it's not catching on, is it? But I'm getting big Tenacious D, Jack Black vibes, particularly with the... It's like School of Rock-esque, but now a lot of fun, but... I ain't catching on, I'm afraid. I'm sorry.
Good stuff, though, Jeffrey. Enjoy the recording. Cheers, thanks for sending
I
want to
meet
in.
Jeff.
Honestly, yeah.
Sounds like a character.
In the States, we're gonna have to get over there. Right, last one. This is from Louis Waldock. He says, Sammy, not here, I'm afraid. We'll have to do with us. A this will catch on that will definitely slash maybe slash probably not catch on. For our magic match winner, since the O Alex Iwobi is recycled for any player that fits, I agree with that on all levels. And I want to dance with Iwobi has not caught on much. That's a real shame. So here we go. This is from Louis.
Samina, waka waka, 20 million down the drain. Iwobi scores again. Samina, waka waka, 20 million down the drain. Iwobi scores again.
Now, I think that's probably got legs.
Wait, I don't understand. Why is 20 million gone down the drain?
It's just the song that people sing. I think it's like an ironic when people are like, what a waste of money.
Right.
To basically be like, oh... Yeah, but down the drain.
Was Iwobi seen as a waste of money? Like
not for us. He was for Everton, famously. I mean, when he moved from Arsenal to Everton and people couldn't believe it was 40 million. I think it makes more sense.
It works with Kai Havertz, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Like Arsenal when there's 60 million.
Arsenal sing it for Kai Havertz.
Down the drain.
Yeah. Well, there was a version of it that obviously wasn't that tune. Yeah, exactly. There was a version of it that United used to sing for Martial that wasn't to that tune, but it was also 50 million down the drain. Tony Marshall scores again. I quite like that. I think that potentially works.
You'll have all the thickos like me who are like, I just don't get it.
I just think if someone gets that going at an away game, that'll go. That's the kind of thing that people will probably be able to get on board with. I don't mind it. I do think we're missing a trick in not having I Want to Dance with a Iwobi.
I was going to say, why is that not caught on?
I don't know. It hasn't really. It was hard because obviously the original rhyming line was "'Cause Iwobi's a toffee." That was the end of it that they used to use. So that's why I think we're struggling with an E rhyme at the end of it. But there's also, you know, I also think that there should be a song for Alex Iwobi to Mr. Saxo Beat that I've been sort of brainstorming in my head for the last 7 months, but I haven't got to the end of it yet.
Remind me of the tune to that one.
Alex Iwobi. But it needs words, obviously. That's just the tune. But I think there's something to that. I think people could get on board with that.
It's Here's the vision. Enough. Make it happen, listeners.
Yeah. Listeners, please help. I'm struggling with the actual words. I did have a... I did have an original version, but I've forgotten it in the heat of the moment, under the lights in the studio. I've lost all composure, so I've forgotten the words for now. But I'll get back to you on that one. And on that bombshell, I think it's probably time that we call this a day. So all that's left for me to do is to say thank you all so much for listening. Thank you for your questions and for your This Will Catch Ons. Thank you ever so much, as ever, to Mr. Peter Rutzler.
Oh, thank you.
Thank Always you fun. Very much to Mr. George Cooper.
Thank you, Jack.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been the Fulhamish podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back on Sunday looking back at the Tottenham game. But for now, take it easy. You whites.